Hi, this is Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda from Highlander. Check out my new young adult novel called Shillily. It's out in ebook right now on Amazon and all the other platforms out there in the world. Check it out. It's a romantic fantasy, and I'd love for you to read it. You are listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 14 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including the movies, the TV shows, guest interviews, novels, audiobooks, games, special events, anime, and more. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts. However, I do not do this alone. I need my fellow immortal brother and human Highlander encyclopedia expert. With me is my co-host, Norman. Welcome, Norm.
Hello, everyone. I think I look really good in a red bandana, don't you think?
Oh, you totally rock the bandana. And I think I look good in some denim.
I think you totally look good in denim. But yeah, since this is radio and not video, no one really can see it.
So. That's true. But, you know, in Seacouver, that's where we rock it, man. So, yeah.
Seacouver rocks the denim.
That's right. Yes. hey, you know what, Norman? We have a special guest co-host with us today.
What is that? Yes. I'm tingling.
With us is our fellow Fandom Podcast Network co-founder and anime aficionado, Mr. Kyle Wagner. Welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, but I got to tell you, I am all out of denim.
And not to be confused with Lyle Wagner of Wagoners to the Stars.
That's right. That's right. So are we all in 90s fashion right now? Because, you know, I know I can rock the denim. I can also rock the peg leg pants, too. I could do that pretty good.
Oh, straight up. Again, this is all up to our listeners' imagination. So whatever you want us to be wearing right now, we're wearing.
Well, and, you know, be thankful. I'm actually thankful within this is one of those times where we're a podcast and not a video show.
Yes. That's
right. We all have faces for radio.
Well, Kyle, man, it is good to have you on our episode of Blood of Kings. And, you know, we're not just having you on because we like you and all, but we're having you on for a very specific reason.
You're actually going to make me work.
Yep. We are going to put you to work. Sorry. Not sorry. But you happen to be our house expert on anime.
Mm-hmm. Really? And really? Wait a minute. Nobody told me this. I mean, I know I have over 200 in my bedroom, but I didn't realize I was a house expert.
We're talking about anime, right?
Yeah. Well, I wish it was the other thing, but you know. But yeah, you watchers, you guys just don't share information.
Well, we like keeping things like segmented so that there's plausible deniability within each branch.
Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense.
So Kyle's coming in from Watchers Anime Research, based in the Florida Panhandle area.
Well, I'm disappointed you guys didn't let me bring my giant robot. That's all.
Okay. Well, if he's from the anime department, how do you get into that if you're a Watcher cadet? How does that happen?
Well, I think you would have to start with probably the starter set. I think of anime, which obviously starts with Akira.
Okay.
And quite possibly Fist of the North Star. That's just me.
Robotech.
Definitely Robotech. But why don't we ask Kyle? Because Kyle is basically, he's the in charge.
That's
of that
why
division.
We have him here. We should totally answer that question.
I know. I'm straight up like usurping his power.
Well, you guys started off well, but the big key is being able to power watch Neon Genesis Evangelion and getting through the last two episodes and the two original films without completely losing your mind and having it split open and pour out orange goo. If you can do that, you make it into the Watchers branch.
I'm going to take your word for it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if you're an anime fan, you know exactly what he's talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. I can only share out so much privilege.
Well, the reason why we have Kyle on today as our fellow anime expert is we are covering Highlander, The Search for Vengeance. Norm, mm-hmm. I remember when we were talking about covering certain Highlander topics, this was definitely targeted. And we wanted to touch in on one of the movies, as well as not just a movie, but a different version of Highlander, I guess you could say.
Well, I think that a lot of the Highlander fans have actually touted this as being probably one of the true successors, and not necessarily in a continuity way, but in a quality and spirit of Highlander type of way, because this is a really good story. It's a really good extension of the universe, probably because, at least story-wise and concept-wise, it was written by David Abramowitz, and we all know the quality of David Abramowitz's work to the series. So there's a lot going on in terms of the multifaceted layering of how this works within the canon. And being anime, it has the ability to be able to extend itself in certain ways when it comes to combat and just the sheer energy and the visual scope and epicness of the movie. So it has the luxury of being able to go in certain directions that live action and live action budgets don't necessarily have the opportunity to do.
Agreed. And now, Kyle, when we first approached you about this, on the excitement meter from 1 to 10, 10 being, you know, like the best quickening ever, 1 being Michael Christian.
on my sides. Oh, side splitting. Oh. Because Michael Christian sucks. But Barry Pepper is awesome. So
yes.
Do we count Battlefield Earth in that?
Also sucks.
So Kyle, you, this is your wheelhouse, man. What was your first thoughts when we wanted you to hit on this for us?
Well, I think I was glad for you guys to say that you wanted to hit on this, because Search for Vengeance is it's a very interesting place in anime, because it was done by Studio Madhouse. And for those of you who may not be very familiar with anime, or your only real exposure to anime if you're a Highlander fan is this particular film, Studio Madhouse has been kind of one of the anime houses to the States. They've done a lot of really big things that have hit in the U.S. One of their biggest titles was around the time anime was just starting to pull in to a resurgence in the States in the, I'm going to say about 93, 94. There was the company Manga Entertainment. And one of the early titles they put out was a very pop, and to this day considered one of the best anime movies. And that's a movie called Ninja Scroll.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I know, Norman, you're familiar with that film.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Ninja Scroll is one of those animes that it draws in people who aren't anime fans. It's that amazingly animated and that well of a story. So it's one of those gateway anime films. And they did a few other things. That they've done a lot of things, but their next big title was Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust. Yeah.
That was the one I remember getting into. Someone had told me about that, and I got that on VHS, and I thought it was great.
Oh yeah, that to this
VHS.
Day.
VHS. I mean, exactly. What is that again?
Are you sure it wasn't Betamax?
VHS. Yeah, those are the ones where you had to feed the hamster to make it go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, they just put out Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust about a year and a half now, almost 2 years ago, on Blu-ray, along with the original Vampire Hunter D anime from the early 80s. But to go back and watch that Bloodlust, again, Madhouse's animation style is very unique. The people tend to be very angular. Mm-hmm. If you look at them in the way, especially in their facial designs. But what Studio Madhouse does so well is kind of a darker look to their animes, and they're very good about setting the tone of their anime, going right out of it. When Highlander: Search for Vengeance came out, it was 2007 as far as the U.S. release date, and it was really after Bloodlust, it was kind of Madhouse really starting to tie in with more U.S. properties, which actually continued after they released Highlander: Search for Vengeance, because Madhouse also did the four G4 Marvel shows. And I don't know if you guys remember that or not. G4 Network actually dove into anime for about a year, and they did four show with Madhouse and Marvel teamed up. They did an X-Men show, a Wolverine show, a Iron Man show, and a Blade show. And all of those shows are still available on iTunes if you want to check them out. If you walk out of those, the best, I think my personal favorites were the X-Men and the Iron Man show. And they had a lot of regular American actors doing those voices. But you get back to Search for Vengeance, and what was so great about that was what Norman brought up, is they brought in David Abramowitz. And I think when you look at this film, considering a little bit of the culture clash they had there, yes, shout out to the culture clash.
Ooh, culture clash. There you go.
But the clash of styles between how a Japanese animation studio works and then how American writers work their style, I think this was one of the better team-ups that brought us such a quality anime. And because, like you said, if nothing else, what I think this particular anime does is it stays true to the concept of the source material.
Right, right.
And I think with Abramowitz's input and with the way the Japanese studios are about honoring their source materials, I think it was a perfect combination. And like Norman said, there's so much more you can do with an anime and let your imagination run wild, especially at this time in movie making, because we were just starting to get into computer effects around 2007. And there were times where if it just wasn't done right, it looked hokey. So
yeah,
animation, hand-drawn animation was beautiful for this. And they were able to push the envelope so much more in ways by doing an anime compared to they ever could with a Highlander live-action film.
Right, right. And the thing is that, you know, we're going to be doing a commentary on this movie for all the listeners out there wanting to know, like, where we're going with this. So before we get into that, and we're going to go really, really deep into the quality of our commentary in that anime, Kevin, I think we're going to take a little bit of a pause here, dial it back a little bit. And I don't think that Kyle's had the opportunity to have snacks with us at the Watchers Roundtable at Joe's.
No, he's visiting Seacouver. We have to take him, you know.
Right.
So yeah, let's.
I don't think we want to. I don't think we want to like drag him over to DeSalvo's.
No. Yeah, let's not do that, and we'll skip the hot dog stand. You don't. You don't.
I sharpened my sword though, guys.
Well, that's okay. We'll put the sword to use in a little bit. But right now,
We'll just put the sword up by the pool cues for now. You'll be good.
Yeah, so we're going to go grab our chair. We're going to grab our chairs. Mikey has our velvet roped off area. And we are going to head on over to our round table at Joe's.
All right. Here we are. Kyle, what do you think of the place, man?
Not bad. A little bit of dive quality, but it works. It works for the setting. And it works for the kind of happenings that go around in this place. And really, you know, we are talking about you guys. So.
All right, I got to ask you, what would you have to drink or eat at Joe's?
I got to think. I'm thinking something straight up. You know, you keep it simple.
Norm, you like to switch things up here. What are you having today?
Oh, I'm definitely having a Blanton's bourbon right now. And, you know, Mikey knows what. He knows what I like, you know, and you can only do single malts are great. Don't get me wrong, but you got to dial it back to a little bit more of that American Kentucky heritage of the corn mash. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he doesn't.
Wait, Kevin. Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, but all things considered, what we are doing tonight, we need to throw a little sake into the mix.
Ah, ooh. Good choice. I like that.
Sake it to me, baby. That was terrible. And I apologize to all the listeners right now. That's Kevin's fault.
That's all right. I did make a quick stop over in Seattle, and I did bring over the border a 7-Eleven Slurpee. So I hope Joe doesn't mind that I still have half one. So I'm just going to bring it in, and you know, I'll order something off the menu. He'll be fine. So
I did bring some Pocky too. So we got it covered.
Very nice.
We have our traditional and our homage to the Matt Clifton Triangle food here. So we do have a Hispanic pita.
Nice.
And we also have Doritos. So, yes, cultural. That's what we are here at the Roundtable. We're cultural. Yeah. And bugles.
We know how to class up the joint.
That's right.
Well, one of the things that we'd like to definitely touch here at the Watchers Roundtables at Joe's is current events, especially things that are happening in Highlander in the world and news today. Right around the corner, Norm, we've got the Highlander Blu-ray 4K cut. Are you going to be running directly to the video store to get it, or are you ordering it?
Okay, so this is not a plug for Amazon, but it is. So it's coming to my doorstep that day. September 27th, ladies and gentlemen, is the Blu-ray remastered version of Highlander. It's not necessarily the 4K version of it, because I don't think they're releasing the actual 4K version of it in the United States, but they are releasing that particular cut and edit. So I would say that run, don't walk to your local vendor, Best Buy or Circuit City if they're around, or wherever you get your DVD Blu-ray fix, because Kevin and I and Kyle, we're going to literally get our copies, tear them open, and just watch the ever-loving heck out of these movies just to see what happened and to see the documentary and to see the special features. And we are going to report on that on a very, very soon-to-be-released episode of Blood of Kings, because I know a lot of people out there are going to want to hear our take on this particular cut, the restoration, the way that the stock was cleaned up, and if any small changes, no matter how meager, happened in the movie. But I don't think so. I don't think there are going to be any like really small changes to it. I think everything has to do with just the restoration itself.
See, Google, Amazon. Okay, I got to check out this Amazon thing that you're talking about. Okay,
cool. I thought the Amazon was a rainforest.
It's pretty good. What are we talking about here? It's okay. You know,
is it getting a digital release too, Kyle? I know you love to do the digital releases.
I haven't. I was wondering that myself. If it is, they're just going to sneak it out on iTunes at midnight tonight.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to
that. I haven't seen much hype on it.
I'll probably hit my Target, or I don't know. I'm going to check the prices on Amazon and see what they're doing there, cuz maybe I can get a drone to my house. That'd be really cool. Highlander drone. How awesome would that be?
Unless it cuts off your head as it's flying around.
Yeah.
That would suck.
I was
going to
say.
Yeah,
that would
straight up suck.
Could some immortals use a drone as a weapon?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we've ever actually seen a propeller used in that fashion.
That's a good point. I thought there was an episode of Highlander TV show. Someone fell off, and I think Duncan got the quitting. Am I thinking Indiana Jones 3?
No, you're thinking about Indiana Jones and when the the cruciform sword, the ambassador of the cruciform sword, he was like his ship was getting chopped up.
Okay. I thought there was an episode in the first season. It wasn't like Sea Witch or something, right? I thought someone, I don't know, maybe I'm remembering that wrong. But yeah,
I can't believe there hasn't been an accidental quickening at some point.
Well, if there were an accidental quickening with the use of a propeller blade, somebody was not chronicling it well. Or they were just like, really? A propeller
blade? You know, that would be an excellent email to get from listeners to see if I am remembering that right, or if there is a fan fiction story or something like that, like the accidental quickening chapter. That'd be kind of cool.
Is that like the accidental tourist? Are we actually going to do that? The accidental quickening?
Yeah, the accidental quickening. There we go.
There you go. Okay. Highlander Heart, we're talking to you. That's your next book, The Accidental Quickening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great idea. Well, let's talk about some things that's coming up for us. We've touched on them recently. Kyle, Norm is going to do the sword experience at Stanley's Kamikaze. Are you a little bit jealous?
Well, I am a little envious, you know.
You're a lot envious. Be honest.
Oh, no, Norman. my question is, I mean, we know you're going to, you know, get to work with Adrian, but are you going to get to sword fight Stan Lee?
I would straight up sword fight Stan Lee. You know, I would drop my sword and go to fisticuffs with Stan Lee. But he would
I don't know. I think he could take you, Norm.
He would definitely Hulk smash me in the face. Yeah. But actually, I sent a Twitter out to Adrian and the Sword Experience, because we actually have just seen recently in New Hampshire that he added lightsabers to the mix.
That is so cool,
right? And lightsabers are it's an interesting thing when you're doing combat with lightsabers, because lightsabers can actually, if you believe in the dynamic of lightsabers and these beams being an arc, a folding arc of energy, if you get touched by a lightsaber, you are wounded. So it's a different type of chemistry when you're swinging at full speed, because you don't really have to try and cleave through a lightsaber. All you have to do is try and touch your opponent, really, and then you get the wound in.
You know, I just thought of something. When you think of all the Star Wars films, how many beheadings do you actually see? The only thing I can remember off the top of my head.
Jango Fett.
And Jango Fett. I'm wondering what kind of quickenings those guys would have given.
Okay, so when people are watching those movies, how many of you said out loud, there can be only one?
Well, now, my question would be, would a Sith Lord give off a dark quickening?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so full of light energy, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
The Jango Fett quickening would have been pretty cool for Mace Windu.
It would have been neat to have seen Jango fight with a sword. A laser sword.
Well, if you remember, they did have in the Clone Wars series, there was that black darksaber welded.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, this is going like way off tangent, but do you remember when everyone freaked out when Han wielded Luke's lightsaber in Empire? They're like, oh my God, he can wield a lightsaber? But is there really a mythology about Jedi's only being able to wield lightsabers, or can other people use them, just not use them?
You mean turn them on, you mean?
Yeah.
I think
anybody can use them. I think only Jedi's can probably actually get the Kyber crystal.
Right, and synthesize the crystal or build a lightsaber. So
but I think anyone that needs to open up a Tauntaun gut and stick someone in there, anyone could do that.
Well, it's like pulling out somebody's sword and saying, like, I got to cut this thing in half. It's not like they're really good at sword work, but they can literally slice a Tauntaun so you can stuff your friend in it and keep him warm.
And how warm is it inside a Tauntaun?
Pretty damn warm.
Lukewarm?
Yeah. Thank you! The smell.
Oh boy, we are.
They smell bad on the outside.
We are majorly crossing the streams here. This is great.
All right, dial it back.
Let's dial it back. Let's get you back.
Come on, everything goes into chaos.
Chaos.
let's get you back to Kamikaze here, Norm. Have you? I know you're really excited about this, and you've doing a lot of shares about the event itself and getting it out there. And you're also working on a meetup as well. Mm-hmm. Do you know what day you were targeting? I think last week you were telling us about where you were going to have the meetup. Have you talked about what day you were going to have the meetup?
I like to do the meetup on the same day as Sword Experience, since most of the people there are going to be there for that experience and maybe just do that day. I don't know how many people are going to do the 3 days worth of the Kamikaze, because 3-day conventions are pretty long. So I do believe that is happening on October 29th. That's a Saturday. And the pre-registration starts at 9, and then the actual event starts at 9:30. And the package itself says that it's about a 2.5-hour to 3-hour experience. Now, let me tell you, people, be prepared for something like this. Bring your athletic shoes and your athletic gear, because I train in historical European martial arts. And I do that twice a week, and it's around 2.5 to 3 hours. And it is a workout. And I think that Adrian's going to keep people on their toes, because he's teaching you choreography from certain scenes. And it's something that you definitely want to bring your, again, athletic shoes for. You want to bring in some comfortable shorts, loose shirt, something that is not too impeding in your movement, because you will be working. It is a functional class. He will be teaching you choreography. So I'm saying this trying to be like all reserved and stuff like that. I'm gonna be sword fighting with Adrian Paul. Oh my God! Right.
Well, one thing I was thinking too is, if you are doing this event, I would recommend not planning something else at Kamikaze right after that. You think it's going to end, because there might be some hanging around time, maybe some chatting. Don't just plan on, like, if it's going to be ending, like, let's say 11:00 in the morning, don't plan something at 11:30. Leave an extra hour or so after this to kind of hang out, because you might make some friends here and you might be able to talk to Adrian longer than expected. Who knows what's going to happen, but don't plan something right after that. That's right. There's that dude, Norm.
Yeah. And you know what? We're going to have our Bokens, so maybe we can like do a little bit more extra sword fighting. I'm also going to bring a European-style waster, just to see if I can prod Adrian into thinking about medieval European sword, broadsword, either one-hand, hand-and-a-half bastard, or two-handed sword, versus a katana, because as we've seen in Highlander, most of the swords that he went up against in terms of the choreography were European style swords, whether it is like, say, when he fought Mythos in season 3, and that was a hand, one hand European sword, or say Roddy Piper, you know, in Epitaph for Tommy, where he was doing a two handed longsword with, you know, with the ring. So it was like a giant sword. So it'd be fun to see those things, like, you know, in the mix and see if he can work that into the budget. Again, the reason why I say this is because he's brought up lightsabers, and lightsabers are a completely different dynamic. I think it would be fun if the Japanese style Boken would go up against a European style waster.
I have to ask variety. That would be awesome. I hope to see some pictures of that. Now, I got to ask you, though. You're going to be at Kamikaze. Mm-hmm. Have you, other than, you know, yes, there is other stuff going on other than the sword experience. Is there something?
Is?
Yeah. It's Kamikaze. Have you looked into other events there at Kamikaze that maybe our listeners might be interested in as well? You know, maybe a panel or, you know, some type of other special event? Because you're going to be there, obviously.
Well, to be fair, Kamikaze is one of those types of conventions that they are in the orbit of the larger conventions. When I say that, I meant San Diego Comic-Con, Salt Lake City Con, and New York Comic-Con. So on the West Coast here, for LA, I think this is an actually really nice event. It's smaller. It has a lot more accessibility. For me personally, I'd like to see what's happening a little bit more with the Star Trek 50th anniversary. It reached this crescendo at Star Trek 50 in Las Vegas and in Mission, New York. But I'd like to see if there are any other events that are happening that are kind of like tapering off this 50th year. Because on September 8th, we had the Man Trap. There were a lot of events that were going on for that. And I would just like to meet and greet with some of the fans that are listeners to the Fandom Podcast Network that are also Star Trek fans. Because now we're rolling into the back half, the last quarter of the 50th anniversary. So I'd like to see if there are any panels that are dealing with that. Or visit booths like our friends at Mission Log with John Champion and Ken Ray, or if there are any other booths out there that are supporting the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. Well, hey, Kyle.
Yeah. What you got for me, Kev?
He's too busy munching on the cheese fries. The cheese fries are good.
That's all right. That's all right. Take your time.
They're quite tasty.
Yeah. I like to put some ranch dressing on those. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Sorry, I got distracted there. Mm-hmm. Kyle, guess what, man?
What's that?
You want to go to see this Highlander 30th anniversary convention?
I'm going to step out for this. I'm stepping out for this.
Norm knows how I feel about
Orlando
celebration. Yeah. Welcome to my world, Norman.
So
yeah, I think something could be doable there.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know and already do know, reminder. Kyle and I will be going to the 30th anniversary convention put on by LashCon Events. Mr. Michael Lashman, who we had on as a guest last week. Great mm-hmm. interview. Yep. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me with that.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, we're going to be doing this convention, and we're going to be doing some reporting in as well, some podcasting. We're going to try and see if we can get our fellow contributor, Mr. Davis Grayson, to come help us out as well. You think you might want to do that?
Well, wait a minute. Now, let's talk about this for a second. I'm going to be doing some podcasting and some reporting. You're going to be golf doing sword experience and training with Efron Nagash.
And fan fighting with Elizabeth Grayson.
Oh, stop it. Just rub it in. Just stop it. Really, just stop it.
I might be interviewing all that. You're going to be doing that. I'll be interviewing them all.
I promise to do some work. I do promise. So
you'll take that 5 minutes handing out business cards.
Yeah, there we go. But I'm looking forward to this. Not just because you and I are going to be doing this together, but we're going to get a chance to really see fans of Highlander gather together for the first time in a long time. So I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this, and after talking with Michael, I still think we're going to see a couple more guest announcements.
I think so too.
I think he's working on a couple more names. Because there's just still a couple big names he hasn't gotten from even the TV show that I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't pop up before it's all said and done.
Who would you like to see that hasn't been named yet or notified yet?
I think we got to get Stan.
I'd love to see Stan out there again. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
I mean,
yeah.
Stan, Elizabeth, and Adrian. I mean, the only other person I think I would love to see there would be Jim and maybe Alexandra.
I would love to see Mr. Mythos.
No.
Why would you say that, Norm?
I'm just kidding, of course. Of course you would want to see Mythos there, of course. I'm just saying. I mean, in our druthers, it would be great to see Peter, you know, just back out there. But we all know that he's, like, really, really, really busy in his medical career. And he's
God saving lives.
You know, yeah, what?
He's taken many. He's taken 10,000, and he was good at it.
That's right. But you know what? He actually might become useful at Highlander with all of these swords, knives, and deadly fans flying around. There might be an accident. We could use him.
That's a fair point.
Is there a doctor in the house?
Exactly. Dr. Adams.
Is there a doctor in the convention?
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, and Kyle and I, we're going to be covering this for the Fandom Podcast Network, and Norm's going to be holding down the fort here. Oh, come on.
Norm, I get my revenge. My revenge comes in April, so.
You know, just for this. I'm going to buy an Orlando ticket. I'm not even going to go. I'm just going to buy an Orlando ticket.
Not only am I getting the fact I'm not going to be able to go, it's deadline day.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm getting I might as well be getting a dark quickening. I'd probably be better off.
What we're talking about, folks, is that Kyle unfortunately won't be able to hit it up because of tax season. So tax season in the United States is an inevitability. It is something that you just can't change. It happens.
Yeah, it's death, quickenings, and taxes. That's what happens.
Yeah, death, quickenings, and taxes. You're right. Yep.
Well, Norm, is there anything else that you would like to bring up here at the round table at Joe's before we end this?
Nah, I think we love the round table at Joe's. It's a good time for us to be able to reflect on some of the current news and just to tell everyone what's going on. And having Kyle here is awesome because, you know, he hasn't experienced like the cheese fries, the nuclear cheese, and I'm sure that that skin on the top of the roof of your mouth is probably dangling right now because that's what happens when you bite into something like really tough, like hot.
I think the nuclear cheese might be having some other ramifications a little later this evening. So
we'll talk about we'll talk to Joe to make sure that, you know, I think it's Mikey's fault. I think he nukes it a little too much, but we love the round table at Joe's, and it's a time for us to be able to just to kind of catch up with all the fans. But we have a lot. I mean, we have a lot to get to in this show. This is going to be a good show. It's going to be a long show, but it's going to be worthwhile and it's going to be worth your time. So sit back and relax. Enjoy whatever beverage or whatever you're eating. Grab your popcorn, grab your bourbon, grab your Diet Coke, grab your glass of milk, whatever you're doing right now, because this is going to be a good one, because we haven't addressed the animated genre, if you will, in Highlander at all. And as we did the audiobook, you know, a couple of episodes ago, this is our very first foray into the animated genre of Highlander.
Yeah, it's fun to kind of dive into these new medias, as you mentioned with the audiobooks. That was great. Mm-hmm. And this story, Highlander, The Search for Vengeance, I would say that is a fan favorite, as we alluded to earlier, story-wise and just overall. It's just a good combination of great story and anime. I thought that this would be a good time. Let's get into the topic here. Highlander, The Search for Vengeance. Mm-hmm. The film, I'm going to forgive me here. I see if I can say his name right. The film was directed by Yoshiaki Kawajiri. Am I saying
Kawajiri?
That right, Kyle?
Kawajiri.
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 And as you mentioned, famous for Ninja Scroll and Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust, but written by David Abramowitz, also the writer for the Highlander TV series, Raven, and Highlander the Source. The film is a joint venture between Imagi Animation Studios and Madhouse Studios, with Imagi providing the script and the soundtrack while Madhouse produced the animation. It was produced in association with Davis Panzer Productions and distributed by Manga Entertainment on June 5th, 2007. And it aired July 30th, 2007 on Sci-Fi's Animonday block. Now, I got to ask you, Kyle, because I didn't see this when it originally aired. I saw it on video. That was the first time I heard about it. Did you see it on Sci-Fi?
I actually saw it on DVD first because I bought the DVD the day it came out. With the Animonday block on Sci-Fi, even though it was still later, I kind of actually avoided it because I knew they were going to do more editing to it to make it appropriate for TV at the time. We're still talking almost 10 years ago on American television, and there's certain things in this movie that just aren't going to fly at that time frame with the censors on a even though Sci-Fi Channel was, it's more of a secondary network, it still wasn't going to fly at that
time. So you knew there was going to be edits to this before, because I had no idea that, you know, obviously this movie is adult themed. It is not your kid's anime. So you knew this at the time.
Oh yeah, I mean when you're talking Studio Madhouse, outside of the fact when they teamed up with Marvel to do the Marvel shows, and even those were probably would come in as a PG-13 rating. You would definitely throw a hard R rating on this movie, Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust, and Ninja Scroll if they were to just get released in theaters.
Gotcha.
For that timing, you know, that's the thing with anime, and it's one of the things that I think it has gotten better over the years here in the U.S. But you still have this stigma with animation that most people think animation, they just automatically think stuff for kids.
Right. Right.
And so you have to kind of overcome that and realize that, you know, you pick up Highlander Search for Vengeance off your shelf, you're not going to want to show it to your children. It's an incredibly violent film, and it does have nudity, and there is strong language as well. So, and I go back to this, and I just say, you know, always be mindful of what you're watching. Don't just look at a cover and go, oh, well, this seems appropriate. Always know what you're watching.
You had to do that a lot back in those days as well, especially if you go back as far as the 80s and the VHS covers. You know, some of these looked really, really cool, but you weren't quite sure, you know, what you were getting when you actually took a chance on renting those movies. Well, I thought this would be a good time to get into the plot synopsis. And Norm, I'm going to have you lead this for us here, because we want to make sure that the listeners out there that have not seen this film kind of get a lowdown of what's happening. And then when they follow us through, if they choose to do so in the commentary, they will have an idea what they're getting into.
Well, the first thing that people need to kind of like come to grips with is another McLeod character. So we had Connor McLeod in 1986 in the original Highlander and all of the subsequent sequels after that. You had Duncan McLeod, who was in the TV series, and then obviously in Highlander Endgame and Highlander The Source. Then you had Quentin McLeod in Highlander the Animated Series, which we will actually get to at a later time. But now you have Colin McLeod. And Colin McLeod became immortal after his first death in 125 AD in Britannia, in Roman Britain, where his village was attacked by conquering Romans. Another immortal, Marcus Octavius, was leading the Roman army's military, and in his dreams of creating a utopian society, Octavius killed Colin's wife, but was not able to kill Colin, whose body was dragged by a horse to Stonehenge and holy ground, if you will, because Stonehenge has a lot of that mystical, druidic magic that's going on to it, and that's where, obviously, holy ground is where immortals are forbidden to fight. So days later in Stonehenge, Colin is left confused about who he is and why he's still alive. And in this moment, the spirit of a former druid at Stonehenge, at this site, Amerigan, begins communicating with him and explains to him who he is. Colin learns of the game, the rules of immortality, and the druid becomes his lifelong teacher and conscience. And Kyle, I just want to interject here. Now Kawagiri, and in terms of not just Ninja Scroll, but especially in Vampire Hunter D, there's always this voice that talks to his protagonist, especially in Vampire Hunter D.
Oh, yeah. Well, and in Vampire Hunter D, which this actually goes back to even to the original D and the novels and everything like that, how they do that voice is basically the voice he's hearing is a parasite that is part of, has joined his body. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting thing in D, as far as hearing that voice. But a lot, and this is actually a common theme through anime as well, especially in these kinds of animes, is hearing that inner monologue. Yeah. And, or hearing this voice that's kind of the character. It might not even be necessarily the voice of the character, but it's the character's conscience.
Right, exactly. Or almost like a devil's advocate, because when we leave the flashback in the beginning, now we go to the year 2187. This is far in the distant future, and now Colin finds himself in this post-apocalyptic future of New York City. New York City very much like what we saw in 1986 in The Gathering for Highlander, the first movie. You know, Octavius, he's trying to build up this new empire. He's very tyrannical in his oppression of what's happening right there. And then Colin is searching for him, and he's trying to find the person that has wronged him all the way back in 125. So there's a lot of, I believe, David Abramowitz's influence in terms of this revenge factor. What does it do to you? How does it propel the antagonist? And the movie interlaces flashback scenes of this, Colin's plight through vengeance throughout time, Marcus's attempts to reenact the utopian society through force and fear. This is happening over the course of two millennia. I mean, think about that. Listeners, think about that. These are far-reaching plans that are happening, like, all the way back to this era of Roman Britannia. I mean, it's amazing when you really kind of, like, think about how you have to craft this story in terms of... I'm not talking about, like, 400 years like Duncan's been alive, you know, like 420 years. We're talking about thousands of years. We're talking about, like, Four Horsemen level status, or Darius level status, or Grayson level status, you know, like the 2,000, 2,500, 3,000-year-old immortals. So that's where we are with the story. We are basically in this lifelong struggle between two immortals, and I don't want to give too much away now, Kevin, because we are going to be doing the commentary. And
yes.
I don't want to say who wins, but... You know, I'm just saying that, you know, it's a really cool thing when you're watching this. But the true secret of what's happening in this is the byplay between Colin and Amerigan. And it's almost kind of like if... Do you remember at the end of Highlander in 1986 where Ramirez just kind of keeps talking to Connor in that nagging kind of conscience kind of way?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that's what we would have had if we would have continued Connor's storyline in this fashion.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because, and one of the things I wanted to point out for those that do, you know, watch this film, and I'm sure there's a lot of us here at Blood of Kings that haven't seen this in a while. I know I hadn't seen it in a while. It's been sitting on my video shelf for a while, and it was nice to review and get back into this. But it's interesting, what I like about the character Colin in this film is that he is so set on vengeance. He's almost become his mentor, Amerigan, kind of teases at him that he's become an expert at dying because he's so blinded by vengeance here. And you get a great kind of montage and taste of the his failed vengeance meetups, you could say, with Marcus. So that's one of the things I wanted to bring up here. But what I did want to get into next is just touch on the voice acting real quick here before we get into the story itself. Mm-hmm. And there's some names here that I do not know, but we do know one of them. Burns. Mm-hmm. Jim Burns comes in to play the character Doc and another character named Rudy. But before we get into that, I want to ask Kyle, some of these names here are probably very well known throughout the anime universe. And I was wondering if maybe you could touch on some of these. Colin McLeod's played by Alistair Abel. Then we got Zachary Samuels, who does Marcus Octavius. Amerigan is done by Scott McNeil. Adalia is Debbie Mae West. Kyla is Janice Jaude. And there's a bunch of other names here, but is there any of those names that jump out at you and for any other projects that you really like and recommend to other listeners or for our listeners?
To be honest with you, this is where things get kind of interesting with this, because there's a few that were somewhat, they've done a few small projects here and there, but this group, particularly grouping for this film, was not a lot of the current big name voice actors that a lot of people have associated with over the last 20 years. So that's one of the things I found interesting about this film was a lot of voices I hadn't even heard before.
Richard Epcar?
I think, well, you talk, a lot of names that are familiar to fandom. You're talking like a Vic Mignogna, Richard Epcar, obviously, Tony Oliver. You talk about Crispin Freeman, Johnny Yong Bosch, those names, and you've heard them in a lot of things. But again, with this being distributed by Studio Madhouse, and this was such a unique project that they kind of went in a little different direction than the normal voice actors. And I think for this, it works, because I don't necessarily think I would have wanted to heard a lot of voices I was already familiar with doing this particular type of film.
So it's kind of refreshing for you to get some new blood, so to speak.
Yeah, because I think the thing of it is, too, when you're talking about doing a major franchise like a Highlander, where we've already had live action films and everything established, I think maybe going with some, just going with those kind of unknown voices or voices you may have heard here or there, but they weren't in anything absolutely huge at the time. You know, I other than, you know, Jim Burns, obviously, but I think it was the right direction to go. And again, that's one thing I will credit Studio Madhouse with, too, and with Manga Entertainment. Manga Entertainment had a very diverse group of voice actors, and I'm just going to bring this up as an outside example. Manga Entertainment was responsible for the series Macross Plus. A lot of people forget the lead voice actor in that was Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
The man who played one of the two co-leads, Osamu Dyson, was voiced by Bryan Cranston.
He played Osamu?
Yes.
Wow. Mind blown, right?
You and me both, man. That's awesome.
Wow.
That's so, and here is the deal. You cannot get that English track anymore out inside the U.S. because of the rights had expired. And because of what his going rate now is, they refuse to pay to re-release that English dub.
That came out of what, like 96, 97 as an OAV?
No, actually that started coming out about 94, 95.
Earlier, okay, all right.
But it was, I think, 97, 98 before it finished up, because the last volume was very late compared to the other three.
But that was like, yeah, it was a four-part series, right?
Yeah, it was a four-part series, and they also did a movie edition with some extra edits in it that were quite revealing to the story.
Yes, you're right. You're right, yep.
Norman, go ahead, Kyle.
No, I just wanted to reiterate, too. I mean, and I think that's, again, what makes Studio Madhouse was perfect for this film, is because Madhouse is always known for thinking a little outside of the box, and I think Highlander is a property that just welcomes that with open arms.
Gotcha. That's fascinating. Great insight into that. Appreciate that, Kyle. Norman, I wanted to touch on two things before we jump into the commentary. Uh-huh. One of them surprised me that I did not know. Mm-hmm. But I wanted you, first of all, to talk about Colin McLeod himself. Now, he's a little bit different Klansman that we've been, you know, used to when it comes to the original Highlander film with Connor and, of course, Duncan in the TV series. I want you to go into a story about a little backstory on him and why he's a little different. And this is kind of a cool little new take on the Highlander Klansman.
Well, in Highlander, one of the things that's part of the lore, and a lot of people know this already, is that when you are discovered, if you will, you are a foundling. You're never actually truly born, like born in the sense of actually being born from your mother. So in this story, Colin was born in Britannia, in Roman Britain, but his surname was never truly given. It wasn't McLeod at birth. So earlier on in one of the, I don't know, is this a spoiler? Can I say this?
Yes, do it. Yeah.
So in one of the flashback scenes, he is accepted and fought alongside Clan McLeod in a battle. And because of what happened to him, he was embraced in that sense of being an actual true McLeod. So they give him the name and embrace him into the Clan McLeod for giving his life to that battle. And once he comes back to life, as all immortals do, he brings that name into the rest of his existence and everything that he's learned from the Clan McLeod. So there is a little bit of a different take on how this particular McLeod has been given his name, as opposed to Duncan McLeod being the adopted son of the chieftain, Ian McLeod, or Connor McLeod being part of the clan that you already saw in 1986, you know, with his clansmen Dougal and Angus, and already kind of being established as being part of the Clan McLeod. So through his own death, he earned the right to become part of the Clan McLeod, as opposed to already being a member of the Clan McLeod.
Because he gave his life up for the clan and fought with him.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, he made the ultimate sacrifice, and like, you know, you fought like a McLeod, you died like a McLeod, you have earned the name and acceptance into the Clan McLeod.
That was really cool and a nice take on the McLeod saga. Kyle, what did you think of that?
I thought it was a great twist and very original. And I think it kind of helps people be a little bit more accepting of, all McLeod's immortal. What's going on here? You know, I think that was a great, that was a great move by Abramowitz to write that way. So yeah. Now, guys, are you aware of the controversy on this film?
Uh-oh.
Controversy?
Well, when they released it for the U.S., they cut out about 7 or 8 additional scenes.
I'm glad you're bringing that up. That was my next thing, yeah.
From the original cut, which really did not please Mr. Kawajiri very much. And he was actually very insulted by this fact. But the scenes were cut basically because this is just a typical thing, a little bit too much Japanese influence in the film. They felt like it kind of hurt the pacing of the story and maybe didn't quite fit right. At the end of the day, it was about 10 minutes of footage, but it really kind of did put a souring between the U.S. side and the Japanese side at the time. And I think David has even talked about this at points. They did finally release a full director's cut of the film in Japan on December 5th, 2008.
Let me ask you this. I did not know this at all. I had bought my original DVD, which I have here in my hand. Do you know if that cut is still available? Is it on Blu-ray? Is it on DVD? Is you know?
I think you can maybe still pick. I know you can still pick up the Search for Vengeance DVD, and they do call it the director's cut, on Amazon, and it's fairly cheap. I think it's only like $7.99.
Okay.
It's basically about a 10 minutes longer. Truthfully, it doesn't have that much impact on the story itself.
So you've seen it then?
Yeah, I've seen it. It is, again, and I can see why the scenes were cut. It's a little bit more the heavy style of the Japanese influence with the animation and everything like that. But I believe David has even talked about this, and this is one thing that did cause a lot of tension between the U.S. side and the Japanese side with this film, were those cuts. And you know, rightfully so. When an animation studio in Japan puts out a final product and they say they're done with it, that means they're done with it. Nobody else should be touching it.
Right. Let me ask you this, since you're familiar with the director's cut, is there the scenes that were cut out, were they deleted scenes or they extended versions of scenes that maybe they just cut short?
Pretty much for the most part, extended versions of scenes.
Gotcha.
And you know, some of it just made the pacing, and from what I've seen of it at times, it did make the pacing of the film seem just a little bit off. But you know, I guess for me, because of all the anime I've watched and Japanese films I've watched and stuff, that I notice it because I know what I'm looking for. But I think if the average person were to watch it, they might say something just seemed a little funny, or like this scene might have lasted just a little bit too long. But I don't think it impacted the movie either way, other than I think just it was felt like it was a little bit of an insult to the director and Madhouse.
Norm, did you know about this at first? Have you seen the director's cut?
I don't have the director's cut, but I understand that in at least Japanese culture, if there's a finished product that's been signed off on by the director, signed off on by the production, and signed off on by the powers that be, that is a lock in terms of, like, you know, what they expect out of their product. So I can see that if there are any other modulations, if you will, in the final product for the U.S. market, that it would be some type of slight against what has been officially agreed upon as a locked film.
Gotcha. Well, that's fascinating. I got to get my hands on the director's cut just because I'm a completist and I need more Highlander.
That's got to be that has to be a bootleg then, because I don't think I've seen that, you know, in an actual production release.
Well, I'm gonna.
I think Manga UK might have put out. It might have came in a production release through Manga UK.
Okay.
Well, I'm gonna search for this Amazon thing that you guys both speak of. I'll have to check that out. So,
right. Are you gonna search? are you gonna search for that vengeance?
Yes, I am gonna search for that vengeance. Well played, sir.
One other quick note too about this film, guys, and which was very different for most animes is, we learned this when Phantom Podcast Network did its interview with Richard Epcar for our Robotech Fandom flashback. When you're talking about most animes, you're talking about dubbing, which is the actors fitting lines into already the moving mouths of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the animation was done to match the lines. of the characters in the film, which for Japan, for a U.S. release like this, that's something that's very rare.
Are you saying that dubbing for the English or dubbing for the English?
Dubbing for the English, because they knew this was going to be more of a heavy U.S. release at the time.
Okay.
Has that been done a lot since then?
Not really. It's happened a couple of times recently because we're getting into more of a simultaneous broadcast release thanks to the advent of streaming and a relationship between Crunchyroll and Funimation. There's a couple of shows that they do now where literally it airs, and then when it gets released on streaming 24 hours later, basically the English cast of the film has worked an all-nighter, and they've put it together very rapidly to get it out for streaming within like a 24 to 48 hour period.
I'm wondering if that, you know, that little bit of trivia that you just shared about how they made the mouth, you know, I guess the mouth movement match the English dialogue, if that was something that was insisted from the, you know, the American partner side. I don't know if that would be a Davis Panzer thing or what.
I would guess under these circumstances, I wouldn't be surprised if Sensei Kojiri actually chose to go that route himself.
Really?
That wouldn't be shocking to me, just under the aspect of usually, and from what I've read about this film and my understanding of it, when they were producing the animation side of it until the final product was done, they kind of stayed a little hands off because they didn't want to offend anybody. And of course, then they did what they did at the end. But again, this is such a unique production for an anime, and I think this is why with this film it stands out a little bit even in the anime echelon, because it has its own unique place in the history of anime.
It does. One last question before we get on the commentary for you, Kyle. Would you say that when this movie came out, because of the huge worldwide audience that Highlander has, and with the you know, new media here using in animation and being anime, would you say that it maybe brought a lot of new fans into anime or new fans into Highlander?
I'm gonna say it probably did a little bit of both. I don't know how much it really put into waves into the sea for that thing. I'm sure it did a crossover, a little bit of both. I think what this film really did, though, what really opened some eyes, it's one of the first American properties to really be given the anime treatment at the time.
Gotcha.
So that was something a little different, and I think that's what really caught a lot of people's attention. And the fact that you had Abramowitz writing it, which was a pretty big deal as well. So I think it did have some crossover success. I know that this film had very positive initial reception when it came over here. A lot of 8 out of 10s, 9.5s, and a lot of people felt like bringing in the animation style really kind of brought something fresh to the Highlander franchise that was really needed for it at the time.
I think for me, you know, like, and maybe I'll save this for the rest of the for the commentary at the end of the film, but it is truer, in my opinion, it is truer to the nature of Highlander than many of the sequels were. I'm going to throw that out there, and I'm willing to defend that position.
Now, I would agree with you on that, definitely. It felt true Highlander, you know. I would think, too, that a lot of fans would say this is not necessarily a sequel. Mm-mm. Could be, but it is truer to the original Highlander film, which you know, had a high appeal for a lot of Highlander fans. So, yeah. Well, as we end this first part of the Highlander Search for Vengeance, the kind of retrospective that we've done here, Norm, just a quick thought on how you're feeling right now. You know, we're going to be going into the commentary on our next part here. Is there any last-minute thoughts you'd like to say about Highlander Search for Vengeance?
Well, I'd like to have everyone keep an open mind about what they're watching, because there is a little bit of a tonal shift when, you know, you go from live action to anime. And it's almost kind of like the difference between going from like reading a book to reading a comic book. There is a certain stylistic quality that people sometimes don't necessarily gel with at first. So you might be fighting a little bit of this, the visual information that's happening versus kind of like the morality and the the dramatic byplay that's also happening. So give yourself a chance when you're watching this, if you're watching this for the first time, to really let the content and the morals and the meaning of this anime sink in, because it is truly Highlander story-centric. It's just done in a very different and very hyper-kineticized kind of way that only anime can bring.
Ah, yes. And that's a great point. I love that. Kyle, what is your thought of this as we end this first part, and then eventually we are going to go into the commentary?
Well, first of all, I can't echo Norman's sentiments enough. I think going into anything where you're used to it in one format and going into, especially into an anime format, it can be a little bit of a shock to the system. But again, keep an open mind. I can say this speaking from my animation side. It's one, it's a beautifully animated film, and you will thoroughly enjoy that aspect of it. But the other thing is this film so captures the essence of what Highlander is and what Highlander is about. And I think it adds some great twists and gives you some things to think about, especially as we talk about it in the commentary. I think it's going to give you guys a chance to go, well, when I really want to watch this again without our commentary track and really give you some input on that movie. I mean, this is an outstanding film, whether it's animated or not, and enjoy this art form, because it's an amazing art form, and we are in a realm now where we don't get this hand-drawn two-dimensional animation as much as we used to, and this is just absolutely gorgeous. So enjoy it. It's a great story and a great collaboration between the U.S. and Japan.
Yeah, you're right. The two-dimensional is kind of becoming a lost art now, so that's a great point. One thing I'd like to mention is that for our next episode with the Search for Vengeance commentary that we do, even if you haven't seen the movie or even if you don't own the movie, I think you will have a great time listening to us talk about it, because we're going to be throwing out all kinds of Highlander insight, not just about the movie itself, but the moral, the meanings behind it too, and the true story. And we're going to dive deep into what Abramowitz wanted to tell in this story. So please stay tuned for that next time. Quickly, we just want to mention that other things that are happening on the Fandom Podcast Network. We've got Culture Clash, where Kyle, you and I have been co-hosting this for a while now, and we're having fun talking about our weekly geeky and nerdy news. It's been a lot of fun recently, man. It's good to be back after Dragon Con doing that.
Yeah, and we're getting ready to record our next episode. And Kevin, I think we got to talk a little bit about the Emmys on that episode, because some very exciting things happened.
This is true. Yes. Oh man.
I know Norman was extremely happy.
Totally. Totally.
Love award season. It's gonna be fun talking about. We also got. I know Norm's excited about this. We got The Last Starfighter coming out for the Couch Potato Theater. Mm-hmm. Norm is. I don't think he has any nails left. He's been biting them. He can't wait. He's been chomping at the bits there.
Totally.
Fandom Flashback we have is going to be the year of 1986, all the great movies that came out that year, including Highlander. And it is the 30th anniversary of all movies of 1986, so we're excited about that. It's going to be a four-part series. Kyle and I have just started The End Zone, a weekly NFL wrap-up show as well for you football fans out there. We'll be covering the latest football news, getting you ready for the next season, the next weekend with a fantasy update as well. We have Artist Spotlight with Jamie Cosley, our artist that did our wonderful logo, and we did a Dragon Con wrap-up show as well. I'd like to thank all of our fans and listeners, especially everyone at the Blood of Kings Highlander Fandom Group. As we always say, thank you. Please keep up the participation you guys have been doing. Share your pictures, share your stories. We love that stuff. You can find the Blood of Kings Highlander podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users. On Facebook, Blood of Kings Highlander Fandom Group. We also have the Blood of Kings Highlander CCG collectible card game page, which we'll be visiting again in the near future. Email bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. We will read your emails. We love getting emails, and if you share any stories or any suggestions, please shoot them our way. Follow us on Twitter at bloodofkingspod. I'm Kevin on Twitter at Spartan_Phoenix, as well as on Instagram. Norman, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram also at Starfighter1701.
Awesome. And Kyle, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW.
awesome. And of course, our awesome editor and magic man behind the scenes, Mr. Mike on Twitter. He is at MCellCNL. Please leave us a review on iTunes so we can have new fans find us easier. We love the 5 stars. But of course, we'll take any feedback and we'll read your reviews on the show as well. On behalf of my co-host Norm and our special guest Kyle Wagner, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, which will be Highlander, The Search for Vengeance, The Commentary. Norman and Kyle, that sensation you feel is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers.